The book of Acts, chapter 12, I want to pick up in just a moment reading in the New King James Version at verse 1. We'll read through verse 4 of that text. Remember where we're at in the context of the book of Acts. We had studied about the conversion of the Gentile, Cornelius, in Acts chapter 10. Of course, Peter gave a defense of that in the earlier portion of Acts chapter 11. Luke began to record other conversions of Gentiles taking place in the city of Antioch of Syria, 300 miles north of the city of Jerusalem. And on that occasion, as the church in Jerusalem heard about that taking place, they sent Barnabas to go to Antioch, and of course he encouraged them or exhorted them to continue in their union and fellowship with the Lord Jesus Christ. And then in the process of that time, he went to seek out Saul of Tarsus and bring him to Antioch to work and labor with him, with the church there. And during that particular period of time, prophets came from the city of Jerusalem, one of them by the name of Agabus, prophesied regarding a great famine that was going to come, particularly upon the land of Judea in the days of Claudius Caesar, be about 44 A.D. And of course, the disciples in Antioch resolved to send relief to the Christians living in Judea. And they did that. They sent those funds to the elders of the churches in Judea by the hands of Barnabas and Saul, or the Apostle Paul. Beginning in chapter 12, the subject changes, but the subject of Paul and Barnabas taking those funds, we'll come back to that in chapter 12 later on as they return back to the city of Antioch, having accomplished that mission. But in chapter 12, beginning in verse 1, we come back to what's taking place in the city of Jerusalem and with the church there. In Acts 12, reading from verse 1 through verse 4. Now about that time, Herod the king stretched out his hand to arrest some from the church. Then he killed James, the brother of John, with the sword. And because he saw that it pleased the Jews, he proceeded further to seize Peter also. Now it was the days of unleavened bread. So when he had arrested him, he put him in prison and delivered him before quadrants or squads of soldiers to keep him, intending to bring him before the people after Passover. So chapter 12 and verse 1. Now about that time, of course, refers to the time period of what was just mentioned in the previous context. The time of the distribution of the funds to the elders in the churches of Judea. About that time, Herod the king stretched out his hand to harass some from the church. The church under consideration, of course, is the church in the city of Jerusalem, not the universal church. Herod the king. This Herod was one of four Herods mentioned in the scripture. Herod the Great, remember, he was the one who had all the children put to death. This Herod is a grandson of Herod the Great. He is the son of Herod Antipas, remember, whom Jesus stood before when he was on trial. So this is Herod Antipas's son, sometimes referred to as Herod Agrippa the First. Now later on we'll read about a fourth Herod, back over in chapter 25 of the book of Acts. That'll be Herod Agrippa the Second, the son of this Herod. So each time you see Herods, they come from the family of Herods, and they're different ones. Different ones. This is, of course, Herod Agrippa the First. Now, about the time Herod stretched out his hand to harass some from the church, to harass some, that is, to persecute them, even to put them to death, it seems as though there had been a lull in the persecution and affliction that was coming upon the Christians in the city of Jerusalem from the time period that we read in Acts chapter 8, remember, after the stoning of Stephen in Acts chapter 7. Remember in chapter 8, those people were scattered, that is, the Christians were, after the stoning of Stephen. But now the persecution seems to have come back. And We're not sure why it is that Herod is doing this, perhaps because of the unbelieving Jews have been aroused, because remember what is taking place. Acts chapter 10, Acts chapter 11, and the conversion of the Gentiles in Antioch. So perhaps the unbelieving Jews are creating commotion. They're creating and instigating, you might say, affliction or persecution against the Christians. And so they're not in favor with the Jews any longer. The Christians aren't. And so Herod, of course, seeking to please the unbelieving Jews, would do all he could to persecute the Christians for the sake of, you might say, politics. So perhaps because of the preaching and teaching of the gospel that Gentiles are now acceptable to God and can be recipients of salvation in Christ just like the Jew can, perhaps that's caused the unbelieving Jews to be aroused again to action against the Christians. And that's why Herod, perhaps, is taking action against God's people on this occasion. Then he killed James, the brother of John, with the sword. James, the brother of John. James and John, remember, apostles of Christ. So this is the first apostle to be put to death for the cause of Christ. He was killed with the sword. Herod, being the king, of course, executed him with the sword, beheaded him with the sword. Beheaded him with the sword. And so, kind of reminds me of what we studied on Wednesday evening. Let me say, that just came to my mind, about the love of Christ in Romans chapter 8. Romans chapter 8. And verse 35, who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation or distress or persecution or famine or nakedness or peril or sword? Sword, the sword of execution. On this occasion, the sword of execution, of course, took out James, John's brother, the Apostle John. So it is the Apostle James under consideration. So even though he was executed with the sword, still, Christ loved him, and still he'll be glorified in the resurrection because of that. So, Acts 12 and in verse 3, and because he saw that it pleased the Jews, what Jews? Were Christians in Jerusalem not Jews? Of course they were, but the Jews under consideration are unbelieving Jews. So, when Herod saw that the execution of one of the apostles pleased the Jews, well, let me do more of it. And so that's what he decides to do for his own political benefit. And because he saw that it pleased the Jews, he proceeded further to seize or take or arrest Peter also. Peter is in the city of Jerusalem again, remember? Earlier we had studied about him preaching the gospel in different places, Lydda and Joppa. He came back to the city of Jerusalem in Acts chapter 10. He's still there, evidently. So how many other apostles are still in Jerusalem? We do not know. Remember in Acts chapter 8, they remained behind when other Christians were scattered and whenever we're preaching the gospel after the stoning of Stephen. But on this occasion, James now has been executed with the sword, and so Herod decides to arrest Peter and do the same, to execute him as well. And because he saw that it pleased the Jews, he proceeded further to seize Peter also. Now it was during the days of unleavened bread, or during the days of the Passover. The reason it says days, remember there was only one day when they observed the Passover meal. But the days of unleavened bread was a seven-day time period. It was the most holy and solemn time for the Jews. And of course, Herod would not interfere with that particular period of time by putting a Jew to death. He was seeking to please the people for his own political advantage, and so he simply arrested him and would hold him until after this time period of celebration, religious celebration of the Passover, and then he would execute him, again for political reasons. Acts 12 and verse 4. So when he had arrested him, He put him in prison. When he had arrested him, he put him in prison. That is, he put him into the prison. The inner prison is that which is under consideration. And delivered him to four quadrants or four squads of soldiers to keep him. That is, to guard him. Four squads or four quadrants. A squad of soldiers that were used as guards consisted of four individuals. In our text, we'll see that two of them were actually chained to Peter, one on each side of him, chained to his arms. And so, the other two would be stationed at doors, exiting the cell, perhaps, where he's at, inside the prison, or the outside door to the prison itself. So, those four soldiers, of course, would be rotated every 3 to 4 hours by a different group of four soldiers. So the total of soldiers that were on guard this night, guarding Peter on this occasion, were 16 soldiers, actually. 16 Roman soldiers guarding him, four at a time. And as each shift changed, then those four soldiers would change. And so that's the four quadrants or four squads of soldiers guarding him, intending to bring him before the people after Passover. Now, is this the verse that says after Easter in the King James Version? Yes. Total mistranslation of the word. But it's after Passover. After Passover. Now, why would they have translated that Easter? Does anyone know? Say again? It was during the time, of course, that people in our own nation celebrate Easter. During April, that's the time frame under consideration. That's when they observe the Passover, the Feast of Passover. And the word is actually Passover, it is translated in most newer versions. Intending to bring him before the people. Note that, intending to bring him before the people after Passover. What does it mean he intended to bring him before the people? He intended to bring him before the people and carry out the execution. Just as he had executed James, he intended to bring Peter before the people and carry out his execution. Decapitate him with the sword. He was intending to do that after the Passover, after the days of the Passover, the 7-day time period. Questions or comments thus far? Acts 12 and verse 5. Acts 12. Well, before we go, let me ask you, Why would Herod put him in the inner prison, chain him to a soldier on his right, chain him to a soldier on his left, put a guard before the door of the cell, and then put a guard before the door exiting the prison? Why would he go to that extreme?
Because he didn't want the same thing that happened in chapter 5.
That's right, because they had been delivered from the prison before. So he says, well, I'm going to make sure that don't happen this time. There's no way he's going to escape this time, because he had escaped before, remember? And so that's why he's gone to such an extent to keep him under watch or keep him under guard with the soldiers. Acts 12, beginning in verse 5, let's read a few verses. Peter was therefore kept in prison, but constant prayer was offered to God for him by the church. And when Herod was about to bring him out that night, Peter was sleeping, bound with two chains between two soldiers, and the guards before the door were keeping the prison. Now behold, an angel of the Lord stood by him, and a light shone in the prison, and he struck Peter on the side, and raised him up, saying, arise quickly. And his chains fell off his hands. Then the angel said to him, gird yourself and tie on your sandals. And so he did. And he said to him, put on your garment and follow me. So he went out, followed him, and did not know what was done by the angel was real, but thought he was seeing a vision. When they were past the first and the second guard post, they came to the iron gate that leads to the city, which opened to them of its own accord, and they went out and went down one street, and immediately the angel departed from him. Back in Acts 12 and verse 5, Peter was therefore kept in prison. So he's going to be kept in prison all the time of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. When that time period is over, Herod intends to bring him out and take him before the people and execute him as he did James, John's brother. We read that constant prayer was offered to God for him by the church, not by the church universal, but by the church in Jerusalem. Constant prayer, that is, they continually prayed to God for him. That is, on his behalf. We have intercessory prayer here. They interceded on the behalf of Peter. They know that what happened to James is probably that which is going to happen to Peter. So the church intercedes for him and prays for him. We do not know what they pray for unless we see what happens. What were they praying for? That God deliver him somehow? God had delivered them from prison before, the apostles before. Is that what they were praying for? Perhaps, because he's delivered from prison. But we're going to see in the context that they're awful surprised when they see he's been delivered. So, were they praying for his deliverance? They were praying for something, and whatever it was, evidently God answered the prayer, whether it was a miraculous deliverance, as took place on this occasion, or whether it was God blessing him in some way, we do not know, but he was delivered on this occasion from death. They could have been praying particularly for that as well. And so Peter was therefore kept in prison, but constant prayer was offered to God for him by the church. And when Herod, and note this, by the church, again I said not the church in universal, but the church local in Jerusalem. But the church local in Jerusalem did not have to all meet together in order for that to be carried out, because we're going to see that some from the church in Jerusalem were meeting in Mary's house later on in the context. Mary, the mother of John Mark. And so all of the brethren were not meeting there praying, but some were. Others, perhaps, were praying in other locations and meeting in other locations because there's persecution against them at this particular period of time. Acts 12 and verse 6, and when Herod was about to bring him out, when he was about to bring him out of the prison and execute him before the people. So when Herod was about to bring him out, that night, Peter was sleeping. Note, he was asleep. Here he is facing his execution. Perhaps most people on death row perhaps don't sleep the night before they're put to death. Peter had no problem with going to sleep. So he's sleeping, even though he's chained to two soldiers, one on his right and one on his left. So when Herod was about to bring him out, that night Peter was sleeping, bound with two chains between two soldiers. And note this, and the guards, plural, before the door were keeping the prison. They were keeping the prison secure. So you got two soldiers on each side, one on each side, and then you got the doors, plural, a soldier at each one of the doors, guarding him. There's the four soldiers. There's the squad. Verse 7, Acts 12. Now behold, an angel of the Lord stood by him, and a light shone in the prison. Of course, the light becomes because there's a heavenly messenger there. And the glory of the brightness, perhaps, of his appearance lights up the inside of the prison cell. But there's something amazing takes place on this occasion. The guards simply do not know what's going on. Either something has happened miraculously, caused great sleep to come upon them. Something has happened. They're not mentioned. But he struck Peter on the side, not forcibly striking him, but he touched him, struck him in such a way to awaken him. And he struck Peter on the side and raised him up. Now, the angel didn't raise him up. He struck him on the side in a sense to arouse him from sleep, because the angel then tells him to get up himself. So he didn't raise him up physically. He struck him on the side, touched him on the side, and aroused him from sleep. That's what the first raised him up means. Saying, note this, arise quickly. So the angel didn't raise him up. He commands Peter to arise, get up quickly. Get up quickly, and his chains fell off his hands. Get up quickly. So he needs to move with haste. That's what he needs to do. This word quickly here, just a point to make on this. This is the same word, Revelation 1 and verse 1, Revelation 22 and verse 6, translated shortly. I've mentioned this several times. When you see that word in the Greek, you have to determine what it means by the context. What it means by the context. And so here it's translated not shortly. He didn't say arise. He didn't say get up in a short period of time. That's not what he's telling you. Lay there if you want to for a while, but shortly get up. No, haste. Quickly get up. It's easy to see that that's what the word means in the context. But in Revelation 1 and verse 1, Revelation 22 and in verse 6, it means shortly. A short period of time. Here it's act with haste. Arise, get up quickly. And his chains fell off his hands miraculously. Verse 8, Acts chapter 12. Then the angel said to him, gird yourself and tie on your sandals. Gird yourself. Now evidently, Peter was sleeping and he had taken off his cloak, that is his overgarment, perhaps covered himself for the night. But he's sleeping in his undergarment, his long flowing inner garment, and the angel tells him to gird himself. That is, wrap up those garments and put your belt around your waist. Tie on your sandals. That is, get ready to move because we're going somewhere. And the angel said to him, gird yourself, tie on your sandals. And so he did. And he said to him, put on your garment. I thought he'd already put on his garment. No, he puts on his outer cloak now. And he says, follow me. Follow me. That is, get behind me and follow me. And that's what Peter does on this occasion. So he went out. He went out from where? He went out of the prison and followed him. And did not know what was done by the angel was real. He didn't know that it was reality taking place. He thought he was seeing a vision. He thought he was having a vision. It did not seem real to him. So he went out and followed him and did not know that what was done by the angel was real, but thought he was seeing a vision. Acts 12 and verse 10. When they were past the first guard and the second guard post, they came to the iron gate that leads to, that is literally into the city. So they passed the first guard post and the second guard post. That's where the two other guards are posted. Those two guards with the two with whom Peter was chained to, that's the squad that was keeping him, watching him, guarding him. So when they came to the iron gate that leads into, literally into the city, which opened to them of its own accord, that is, it opened by itself. It automatically opened. As they approached it, you can almost see the door opening by itself. Divine intervention, of course, as all of this is on this occasion. Which opened to them of its own accord, and they went out. They went out of the prison and went down one street, and immediately, or straightway, or right away, without hesitation, the angel departed from him. So again, he's miraculously delivered from the prison. He is saved from the execution by Herod. He's delivered or rescued. Delivered or rescued by God himself. As God sent an angel to deliver him. We're going to see an angel mentioned later on. They think Peter is an angel or Peter's angel when he comes to the house of Mary. God often uses angels to bring about his calls, remember. The Hebrew writer tells us in Hebrews 1 about verse 14 that angels are ministering servants sent forth to minister to those who will inherit salvation. This was not Peter's personal angel. It was not his guardian angel, but it was an angel of the Lord nonetheless. As God often uses angels to rescue or deliver his people. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they were delivered by an angel of the Lord. Daniel thrown in the lion's den, delivered by the angel of the Lord. The angel came and closed the mouth of the lions, remember? Other occasions, angels were used to deliver or rescue God's people from danger and preserve their life. Acts 12, beginning in verse 11, let's read a few verses. And when Peter had come to himself, he said, Now I know for certain that the Lord has sent his angel and has delivered me from the hand of Herod and from all the expectations of the Jewish people. So when he had considered this, he came to the house of Mary, the mother of John, whose surname was Mark, where many were gathered together praying. And as Peter knocked at the door of the gate, a girl named Rhoda came to answer. When she recognized Peter's voice, because of her gladness, she did not open the gate, but ran in and announced that Peter stood before the gate. But they said to her, You are beside yourself. Yet she kept insisting that it was so. So they said, It is his angel. Now Peter continued knocking, and when they opened the door and saw him, they were astonished. Acts 12 and verse 11. Now when Peter had come to himself, he said, When he had come to himself, remember he thought he was seeing a vision. He didn't know that what was taking place was truth or that which was real. So when he comes to himself and recognizes and realizes, perceives, comprehends that it is real, now I know for certain, for surety, that the Lord has sent his angel and has delivered or rescued me from the hand of Herod. From the hand of Herod? From the power of Herod. The hand to execute him. And from the expectation of the Jewish people. What was the expectation of the Jewish people? They expected Herod to put him to death like he had James. Execute him with the sword. Decapitate him. That was the expectation of the Jewish people. It was the unbelieving Jewish people. Acts 12 and verse 12. So when he had considered this, he came to the house of Mary, the mother of John, whose surname was Mark. John Mark, we'll see him mentioned later on. Remember, Paul and Barnabas are going to take him back to Antioch with them. He's going to begin the journey with them, preaching and teaching the word, but he will depart, and later on Barnabas, we know that account. Barnabas will choose him and go in one direction and Paul in another direction. The John Mark under consideration here is the one who would later write the Gospel of Mark. This is the Mark under consideration. This is a young man mentioned here. So he's introduced here. He'll be mentioned later on in the context. So he came to the house of Mary, the mother of John, whose surname was Mark. Note this, where many were gathered together. They were assembled together, praying. There's the constant prayer, the continual prayer being made for the church. And as Peter knocked at the door, note this, he knocked at the door of the gate. So Peter knocked at the door of the gate. If you could picture in your mind, during this particular period of time, many houses had a fence around them, and the fence had a gate that you had to enter in. As we read back in Acts chapter 10, when the men from Caesarea came to Joppa to seek Peter, they stood at the gate or the door and hollered out, Is Peter here? And so that's what takes place on this occasion. He's knocking at the gate. He's not knocking at the door of the house, even though we might say the gate and the door is connected to the house. But he's not knocking at the door like we would think a door entering into the house. So he has to enter the gate first, Then he goes to the door into the house. That's the picture that is being given for us in the context. As Peter knocked at the door of the gate, a girl named Rhoda came to answer. A girl named Rhoda, a bondservant, a maidservant in the house of Mary, came to answer the call that's being made, perhaps, by Peter and the knocking. Remember, they're outside the house knocking. Evidently, she was tasked with answering and responding to those who would come to the door. Rhoda, meaning a rosebud. When she recognized Peter's voice, that tells me that Peter had called out. When she had recognized Peter's voice, now she hadn't seen Peter yet, she just recognized the voice. She hasn't opened the gate. When she recognized Peter's voice, because of her gladness, she did not open the gate. Her gladness, her happiness, she was filled with joy. Because Peter is no longer in prison and he's alive. Because of her gladness, she did not open the gate and ran in and announced that Peter stood before the gate. He stood before the gate. He's outside standing before the gate. He's out there. I heard his voice. I know it's Peter. That tells us that she must have been very familiar with Peter. He must have visited in this household before. And she was familiar enough with his voice to recognize it. Verse 15, Acts 12. But they said to her, "You are beside yourself. You're out of your mind." Why would they say that? How is it that Peter could be outside the gate, but yet he's guarded by four soldiers inside the prison? There's no way that Peter could be standing outside the gate. So you're out of your mind. You're mad. Here's another one of those occasions where something takes place, but yet we have even Christians who disbelieve in the evidence that is being presented by them, by one with first-hand knowledge. But they said to her, "You're beside yourself." Yet she kept insisting that it was so. So they said, "It is his angel. It is his angel." Now, of course, the Jews believed in what we speak of today as being guarding angels. They not only believe that each person has a guarding angel, but they also believe that if one died, perhaps they would come back as an angel. And people have those conceptions today. So here he says, it is his angel. Now, what would we say? What would we say if one said, "Well, he's outside the door. I know it is him because I hear his voice." We'd say, "Well, it's his ghost." That's the idea. It's his ghost. The scripture doesn't speak of a personal angel, that is, a guardian angel over each individual. God does use angels as ministering servants. Yes, they did. They believed that. But it's not, the point I'm making is it's not substantiated by Scripture. They had many beliefs that weren't true in and of themselves. It would seem as though that, you know, well, if each has a personal angel, where is he at? Well, one occasion, one angel might help Peter on this occasion. Another occasion, another angel might help him. Totally different angel. God has many, many multitudes of angels. So they're all ministering spirits sent forth. We don't have our own personal angel to guard us and deliver us and rescue us from harm. But God uses them for his people. And on this occasion, that's what happened. Just because the Jews thought it was his angel, they were wrong. It was Peter himself. Acts 12, verse 16. Now Peter continued knocking. And when they opened the door and saw him, they were amazed. They were astonished. They were astounded. Again, it goes back to the question, well, what were they praying for? Perhaps they were praying for his deliverance somehow. Perhaps they were praying for preservation of his life, maybe. That he would remain faithful. There's any number of things that he could be praying for, but whatever it was, God answered the prayer by preserving his life on this occasion, and he would eventually be put to death for the cause of Christ, but not at this time. So verse 17 of Acts 12, "But motioning to them with his hands to keep silent, he declared to them how the Lord had brought him out of the prison. And he said, 'Go, tell these things to James and to the brethren.' And he departed and went to another place." So motioning to them, beckoning to them, signaling with his hands, like, keep the noise down, let me talk, let me tell you what's just happened. So that's what he's doing here. "But motioning to them with his hand to keep silent, he declared to them," that is, he recounted to them what had just taken place. "He declared to them how the Lord had brought him out of the prison." Now, I thought an angel had brought him out of the prison. No, God brought him out of the prison. But he brought him out of the prison by or through the medium of an angel. But it was God who delivered him. That's who it was. God simply did it through someone else, through his ministering servant, his angel. And so he declared to them how the Lord had brought him out of the prison. And he said, "Go tell these things." That is, go recount these things to James. Now, we know it's not James the apostle, because he's just been put to death by Herod back in that first part of the chapter. So what James is this? James, the Lord's brother. Remember, we read later on how he seemed to be one prominent in the church at Jerusalem. Could have been one of the elders. We do not know that for certain. But he was very prominent and active in the church at Jerusalem. It also tells us on this occasion that being prominent and active in the church at Jerusalem, he wasn't meeting with the brethren in the house of Mary at this time. They had to go tell James. He's somewhere else, but he's somewhere else, note this, with the brethren. The church, all the church, could not meet in one location in the city of Jerusalem at this time. As a matter of fact, it's in the middle of the night. It's in the middle of the night when this takes place. They're all in different houses, meeting in different places, but offering up continual prayer on Peter's behalf. So go tell these things to James, note this, and to the brethren. I take the brethren there to be other Christians with James. Now, it could be, since James is the Lord's brother, the word could refer to his other brothers. We saw it used that way back in Acts chapter 1. And so, it's hard to determine, but I take it to be other Christians instead of other brothers of James. Since James is mentioned, why would he be singled out from the other brothers of Jesus? I take it to be brethren, other Christians. And he departed and went to another place. Well, Peter went to another place. Where he went, we do not know. Did he leave the city of Jerusalem? We do not know. Did he go hide in some other house? We do not know. But they were seeking safety because they were going to be put to death. Of course, the Catholics say, well, he went to Rome on this occasion. They read it all into the text. We don't know where he went. We know that he went to some other place for his safety, seeking to preserve his life. Nothing wrong with that. He knew he was going to be put to death. Christians had dispersed themselves before, after the stoning of Stephen. There was nothing wrong with the apostles seeking to save their life as well. We're out of time. All right, we'll pick up at verse 18, Acts 12, verse 18, next Lord's Day morning. Thank you very much for your kind attention. Good comments.